Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, and I'm very excited about today's program because we have two people, two entrepreneurs in our studio. We're talking about a lot of issues that are very close to my heart. We're going to talk about veganism, organic food, local food, and nutrition and all that other good stuff. And we're going to be speaking today specifically with Mitch Cutler and Reza Jari. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And we're going to focus on your business, Hearth to Home, which is embarrassing for me to say that I hadn't heard about it until Mitch had contacted me. And I explored your website, which is very beautiful, and found out more about what you do. So I'll turn it over to you and ask you to summarize maybe what your business is about and what your vision is and what prompted you to switch careers and do this full time.
Sure. Well, it's Hearth to Home Vegan Cuisine. And the URL is hearthtohome.ca if you're in front of your computer. And we started in December of 05, and we are a vegan meal delivery service. That's what we do. I guess you can call us caterers, but we don't do catering events or anything like that yet. The food is all delivered fresh. It comes in reusable containers in a soft-sided cooler bag, and we just pick the stuff up the next week, so it kind of cycles through. That way there's not a lot of waste or anything like that involved.
Yeah, we deliver every Tuesday, so okay. That means today we're doing the delivery after the show, and each week we give three meals, and each meal has got a quality protein, it's got vegetables and whole grains, so it's a complete balanced meal, and it's got powerhouse of proteins. We've got tofu, tempeh, beans, and seitan.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have, like, the sample we gave you guys today, which you guys can dig into as an example of, it's a full meal. So you've got your vegetable, you've got your grain, you got your protein. And you
okay. So I'm guessing people might be listening saying, well, there's so many great food options in Toronto. Why would you bother with a meal delivery system? Who is this for?
Well, Reza could probably answer that question pretty well, but I'll just say it's for people who want to eat healthy, who don't have a lot of time, and they want to avoid animal products, or at least cut down on them as much as they can.
Well, our clients are really varied. It's basically a lot of people that are working a lot. You know how it is, either you're just working all the time or you don't have enough work. We've got people that are just working all the time, and we've got a lot of new mothers. Mm. It really varies. We've got younger people. We have older people. Mm-hmm. We have some people that are challenged with some diseases. Their health is not so great, and our service helps them so that it's all prepared for them. And they feel good. They get more energy. And it's also just people that are maybe vegetarian or interested in vegetarianism, veganism. They want to eat more healthily, but there's also the learning curve. So it's a little difficult. Maybe they have time to make a few meals on their own, but they want some new ideas. That sort of thing.
And not all of our clients, by the way, are vegetarian or vegan. Some of them are, I guess, omnivores or flexitarians.
Okay.
But they're people who really understand the need to start cutting down on the amount of animal products that they eat. So they might actually do still eat something. Maybe they're weaning themselves off meat or dairy. Or maybe they like it too much, but they realize that, no, I can't do this all the time. I have to cut down. And this is a perfect way for them to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a lot healthier option than perhaps, ordering out food from a sort of a typical restaurant and doing that. You have no control or often don't know exactly what's going into the food or how much fat there is in it or
you have no idea what the ingredients are.
You don't. And if you watch any cooking shows, you'll see them, especially the ones that take place in the kitchen, you'll see them using a lot of butter and duck fat and all kinds. And that's why a lot of restaurant food sometimes tastes really well, because they're really putting a lot of fat and things in it that you wouldn't do necessarily at home. And so this is an opportunity for people to eat, really healthfully, without having to drive out to a restaurant and all that sort of stuff.
Right, you get to kind of have the home-cooked meal experience in your home and be able to perhaps even share that with your family or, or friends.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so why are you both so passionate about food and about vegetarianism and veganism? You listed off a sample of the different proteins that you offer, and I think for some people listening, we of course do have vegetarians and vegans that listen to the show, but when you say things like that to an omnivore, those can be scary words. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your journey with food and with veganism in particular.
Well, I guess it all comes down to the fact that when we became vegetarian, I was 16 at that time, and I was also living out in Whitby in the suburbs. It was very difficult. There weren't very many options, and I'm not the kind of person who started I didn't like meat or something like that. I actually really liked the taste. For me, it was ethical, compassionate reasons. And I guess I'm, you know, one of the hardest people to convert. So I really missed a lot of tastes, a lot of flavors, and I guess nostalgic for certain foods that I grew up with. And I think a lot of people, it's like that. It's a cultural thing. The food that they grew up with is the food they like to eat. There's an enjoyment factor as well. And I guess as we went along, we were both vegetarian, and we just needed to be satisfied. And there's a lot of people who will be satisfied with vegetables and with salads and really good stuff like that. And I mean, you do get enough protein just by eating vegetables and grains and that sort of thing. But for me, I just needed more of a protein boost. And there was just nothing out there. It just wasn't satisfying when I go to restaurants, even things that we buy in the store, even though there's a lot more options now and it starts to be a lot easier. There just wasn't a lot out there. So that's really what we plan to do is kind of get the food out there that we wanted to eat. And for us, the other thing is the time that goes into it. This way we could cook once a week and we would have food for the rest of the week. And we figured, well, this would be great for other people too, that we could share this.
Yeah. There weren't really a lot of options for eating the kind of food that we wanted to eat. And that was a big impetus for wanting to do that. And, for me, it was a little easier, because I was never really a big meat eater to begin with. And I just, at, you know, 20 had a huge epiphany, and it just kind of all added up. And I said, that's it. Like, I can't do this anymore. I can't eat any more meat. But, it's like Grace said, it's the taste, you know, it's just the taste. It's just, as long as there's no harm being done, you know, the taste doesn't really matter, I guess.
And it might not, some of the things might not taste exactly like meat, but it gives you the same, satisfaction. So for instance, the roast?
Yeah, the roast, for instance, that we make a holiday roast. It was actually featured in Now magazine. We won first place. If you go online and do a search, you'll be able to find it. And that's a big hit with a lot of people. And I think what they like about it is that, well, it's very flavorful, and it's really kind of cool to have on the table, because we do it with a very good stuffing and tofu, and we have a yuba skin. And this is the way we cook it. Looks very much like a cooked turkey. In fact, Race's dad was even commenting as on Thanksgiving, we had ours next to theirs, and he was like, it looks exactly the same. The skin color, everything's the same. But what it is, it's evocative. When you sit down and you eat that roast, you're getting the same textures, the same flavors, the same smells that you would have had with a traditional turkey Thanksgiving meal. And that's what people really like. It's at the end of the meal, they think, wow, I feel really satisfied. I feel like I didn't really miss anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, veganism so often is associated with scarcity, you know, this sense of going without and sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not around
and
our house.
Not in our house, no.
So give us some examples then for people who might be already salivating. What are some of the specific things that you offer?
Well, guys, I'll just start. One of the things that is our strength at Heart to Home is our proteins. And when I say that, and you mentioned earlier, a lot of people might not know what tempeh or seitan is. Everyone knows what tofu is. And tofu is very versatile, and we can use it in many different ways to create different things. Last week we made a drumstick, and I make it look like a drumstick. Well, it's tofu and chestnuts. Yeah. And I even put a little, rutabaga bone in there. So I like the look of things.
And a yuba skin.
and a Yubiskin. I like to work with a lot of soy and Yubiskin, and it's very, you can do a lot with it, and you can wrap things in it. Seitan is commonly referred to as wheat meat. Where you're taking, in our case, we're taking the protein of the wheat berry and spore or whatever, and we create meat out of that. And seitan is excellent for doing our meat substitutes because it can really take on the texture and the flavoring of meat, whereas tofu and tempeh are both good for that, but seitan can really, really do it. And tempeh, of course, the best way to think of tempeh is like Indonesian tofu. It's a similar idea, but it's just made a little differently. And so we use those, to answer your question, we use those in unique ways to create traditional favorites. So I'll take seitan and I'll make a Cuban pork roast with it. Obviously, we're not using real pork, but I'll take a traditional pork recipe. I'll make the seitan. I'll make sure the seitan's a little lighter because pork is generally known as a white meat. And then using all the seasonings and all the flavors that people traditionally use with that meat and then everything that goes along with it.
Another seitan dish is the Caribbean curry chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real favorite, that was my Aunt Janet's recipe. It's something that we used to enjoy when we were camping. Each year she would make it, and this way we make it again, but this time it's more healthy with seitan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's another one we made with red wine and mushrooms, the seitan pan-seared.
Yeah, pan-seared seitan. We've done things like a Swiss steak. We've done a seitan bourguignon. See, all the things, like we've done a stroganoff.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that's the big thing for us, to make it seamless. So, you're not just getting kind of, bean sprout salad. And there's a place for that, mind you, right?
But
you don't want people to think stereotypically, oh, vegan, it's salad, it's bland, it's like you said, it's limitation. The way we do it, there's absolutely no limitation.
We've done scallops, tofu scallops, and we do this with a different kind of tofu, with a Nigari tofu, which is locally made by the Ying Ying Soy Food Company, and they're at the St. Lawrence Market, and they're great. They're a great supplier of ours.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a slightly different taste than the other tofus, and it works really well with a nice marinade. And we cut it out into the shape so it looks like scallops. And sometimes we just do it with like a lemon bourbon sauce. That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times we've done like a creamy saffron sauce. So we like to do sometimes like takes on French foods as well. That's another kind
of
favorite.
Yeah, we do like, Raisa likes Provence food a lot. And those scallops are a signature dish of ours as well. That's another thing you can't really find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because a lot of French food doesn't seem to be very vegan friendly at all.
No.
Nope.
But the cream sauces, it's actually really easy. It's really easy to adapt because you can make a nice cream sauce with cashews, a little silken tofu, and some water. And it might not taste the best right on its own, but when you start combining it with the food, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, and the other spices and whatnot, then you really can't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all the dairy, like sour cream, yogurt, all of that, it's quite easy to replace with healthier options.
Okay, so you brought in an example of some of the food that you offer.
Right.
And I am salivating onto the mic. So tell us about this meal in particular, some of the things that you've offered here, because this is pretty colorful. It's one of the things I noticed right away. And yeah, it really looks hearty.
Well, that's one of our signature dishes, I guess. What you see there is, first of all, there's the three components. That is the pesto stuffed tofu. And so we've taken tofu steaks, like a Nigari tofu, and we essentially put some pesto in there and wrap it in a yuba, and hopefully it's warm.
What is yuba?
Yuba is a soya skin. So when they make tofu, I guess a lot of the tofu, the protein rises to the top, and I'm not the best authority on how it's made, but essentially it's kind of like the way milk skin forms on top, so to speak. It's the same kind of principle, and then that's taken and that's dried, and it can be used to wrap things in. You soak it in water, it becomes very pliable, very malleable, and it's great. It's great for wrapping things and making skins and things. If you've ever had any, what's it called? It's called the Chinese tofu or vegetarian duck. I don't know if you've ever had it before. If you have it at Buddha's restaurant, and that is soy skin. They fold it. They keep folding it and folding it and folding it, and that's how they make it. But there's a lot of different uses for it. Along with that, we have a roasted red pepper because it kind of goes along with the flavoring, and a tomato coulis. And that's sort of, that's that one sort of component.
Okay.
And then we have a barley dish, which is like a smooth barley. And that's another thing with our grains. We switch up grains. It's not just brown rice. It's important that people eat a variety of grains in their diet. And we only know rice here in North America mostly, yeah. But now we're starting to find things like quinoa. Barley is excellent. It's very healing. It's very good. We've mixed some chives in there, a little bit of oil. And then we have green beans, which are just cooked to perfection, just with some oil, salt, and pepper.
Well, very simple, because these are local green beans that are in season right now, so mm-hmm. from
yeah,
local farmers.
I would love to hear more about how you make your food choices and your suppliers. By the way, as I'm eating into the mic here, everything is fantastic. It's all very well prepared. And I love the presentation, even in a little container, a little plastic reusable container. It still looks really pretty.
That's great. Like, this is just a sample, because the way we do it, it's usually separate. Like, we put it all together for you, so you have a nice little meal. But usually what it is 1 cup per component. So people usually get, like, you know, depending on your appetite, which we find really varies with people, you should get about 2 meals out of each one, because it's 3 cups of food. But it's interesting, because we've had some people who are sharing one order, and they find it's too much food. Mm. And then we have other people who they'll order 2 orders, a double order for themselves, so they have enough food for the entire week. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, it varies. And there's no clues. You know, sometimes we'll get these little women who say, it's not enough food, you know, and big men who say, oh, it's too much.
Their metabolisms are high.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk suppliers and about some of those other choices that you're making about food. Of course, there's so many decisions that come into putting together something like this. So why organic? And you mentioned the local green beans. Where do you get your food from, and why are you making those choices?
Well, we get our food from a few different sources, but we do like to go to the Dufferin Grove Farmers Market, and that's an organic market. That's amazing. So we'll go there and pick things up right from the farmers, and we can order straight from the farmers. But that our growing season's really short.
Mm-hmm.
So, you get everything you can when it comes out for the harvest, but you're not always sure that, we'll put up our menu and decide things in a month in advance, but we're not sure that it's going to be out at that time. So we also have a distributor, which is Pure Grocer, and they bring in stuff. They buy stuff locally from farmers here in Ontario and Canada, and then also from California, because in the winter, otherwise, all you're going to get from our area are carrots and onions, maybe some beets, things that are just still in storage.
Just root vegetables, mostly.
Need a little bit of variety.
Yeah.
So why organics for you guys?
Well, organic, I mean, there's a whole host of reasons, I think, why it's good to eat organic food in general, especially locally grown organic as opposed to stuff that's brought in. Even if it's not certified organic, as long as the soil hasn't been, you know, pesticides and chemicals haven't been used in the soil, it's very important for us to make sure we use that kind of produce. There's just no telling what a lot of the chemicals, a lot of the GMO stuff is going to do to people's bodies. We just don't know. We live in a very toxic environment right now. Everything we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe seems to almost be poisonous in a lot of ways. And not to put a lot of doom and gloom on things, it's up to us to make the decision of what we put into our bodies. And going organic seems to be quite, I think, a smart way to go. And wherever you can, I think local organic is the most important. Because you have to be very careful. We've been told that, you know, organic produce brought in from outside of Canada still has to go through checks. It still has to be sprayed with things.
Or irradiated.
Mm-hmm. And also organic is, you know, turning into kind of like a buzzword for a lot of people. So we like to do real, local organic food. That's important to us to keep it as healthy as we possibly can.
Okay. Also for organic, I mean, it's taking care of the soil, taking care of the topsoil, because there's erosion of topsoil, and using traditional methods, it's just to get the highest yields you can while not looking after the soil and having sustainability for future generations. And so organics also all about that. It's taking care of the soil. It's making sure that agricultural workers are safe from pesticides, because I mean, that's not good for people. I mean, people are getting cancers that are working on farms. So I guess it's just that holistic viewpoint mm-hmm. of just taking care of everything, having quality food, and looking after the earth.
So I guess maybe some people would say, well, this sounds really good. Maybe I could subscribe to this, but it must be really expensive. How do you negotiate the prices? I mean, this sounds like kind of an elite thing to be able to have organic, vegan, delicious food delivered to your front doorstep.
Well, I think it's I think it's actually quite reasonable in terms of what you get.
Okay.
There's two types of costs when it comes to food. There's a food cost and there's a health cost. If you walk into McDonald's, you will pay a very little amount of money, so your monetary cost is low, but the health impact that it has on your body is actually quite high. So you always have to look at it and say, well, do I want to be chintzy on my food? I think what we do is we do vegan handcrafted meals with no, you know, additives, preservatives, anything like that. We present it very well, and I think it's a very reasonable price, and it's considering what you get outside. And we've done comparisons of what you get in a restaurant if you go in and order, let's say, a vegan plate of pasta, you know, and you'll pay $15-$16 sometimes, mm-hmm. and really you're not really getting anything. And here, this is really a nutritional powerhouse, really.
Well, it sounds good to me. Carl, did you have anything you wanted to add? I know that you got to sample some of the food here.
I thought the yuba skin wrapped, I've never had that. Well, I have had that texture, but a very long time ago, and I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, good.
It was really, really delicious.
I like to experiment with those things. One of our suppliers, we talked about suppliers, we mentioned Yin Ying Soy Food. They're a local supplier for tofu, so we get that right here in Toronto, and they're at the St. Lawrence Market, and they have all kinds of really great products. They also have not a soy skin, it's more of a tofu sheet, and that's something new that they've given us to experiment with. So I was making burritos actually on the weekend just as an experiment, and it actually worked out really, really well.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It had a really neat kind of cheesy taste. So.
Yeah, so you're not getting any of the flour, you're getting the same thing without the flour tortilla. And it just, I filled it with beans and some onions.
We took the slow-cooked pinto beans we made last week with chipotle sauce.
Yeah, and I just mushed it up, you know, like a refried bean, and rolled it up in these. It was amazing.
So that'll be on our menu.
Yeah, it's going to be on our menu now.
People always love to hear about the cooking mistakes and the disasters in the kitchen. Are you at this point now that you're not really making mistakes, or do you still have things where you're like, oh, well, we should have done that differently? Is it?
I think so. I think we have some mistakes. We'll do. In the beginning, we made a pavé, a vegetable pavé. I remember, and it's just that hasn't been on the menu since. It was a big mistake because I was. Anyway, it's a long story. But you learn. One of the common mistakes that we make, that we've learned, is when you're mimicking traditional food that's made with meat and eggs, it's sometimes cooked that way because of the way that the principles or the way you have to cook meat and eggs or something like that. But you don't have to apply the same principles to cooking vegan foods. So sometimes you have to go completely around that way to get to the finished product. And so we've learned that the hard way.
Okay. Well, what are some of those tips then? Can you offer anybody who's maybe just starting with veganism or things that you wish you would have known?
Well, you had some tips, right?
Generally, I mean, these aren't specific tips, but I just found that I was able to make the leap from vegetarianism to veganism once I had a bunch of really good books, because you need the support. So when I got Becoming Vegan, so that I had the nutritional backup.
That's the Bible, I think.
That's
for
an
the
excellent
vegan
book.
Movement.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. It's great to have that. And if you have a bunch of cookbooks on hand, because, you know, they might not always be your style, so you want to have a lot of variety and options to choose from. And then the other thing is just having a really well-stocked pantry with all of those items that you would use, because then you don't have to go out to the store to buy it. It's already there, so it just makes it easier, so you can just go in there and be creative and have fun. So those are kind of general tips. And then specifically, you have to kind of go with some of the flavors that you already like, because like you say, I mean, you don't want a scarcity kind of thing. You want to feel like you're enjoying. So try to just make your favorite meals and then experiment from there. But I guess, some easy things to do, like some tips that are easy. Like for me, making yogurt, I've seen some more complicated recipes. Now, this doesn't have the live acidophilus culture, but you can just add that as well. You can get vegan versions, like from Noah's or the Big Carrot. But if you take silken tofu and blend it up with lemon juice and salt, you've got yogurt. And you've got to do it until it tastes good. So if you taste it and it doesn't taste so good, keep adding some lemon juice and salt. You need quite a bit of lemon juice. So that's like a simple thing where you've got something dairy. The same as like a cream sauce, like I said before. You've got the silken tofu and cashews and water and blend that up. So equipment as well. You need to have some good equipment.
Yeah, equipment is important. Vitamix is a piece of equipment that we have that's very important. Champion juicer. Those are two pieces that I think every vegetarian or vegan kitchen absolutely has
people
to have.
People covet their Vitamixes.
Oh, yeah,
people
yeah.
swoon. You mention it, and people that have one, they just get misty-eyed.
There's just nothing like it. It really helps create a lot of the dishes and things like that. It really, like for us, it does.
And yeah, it makes it easy and quick.
Nothing blends like it, yeah. Other things, like for seitan, a lot of people have problems with seitan. I found that the best way is experimentation. The old method, you want to call it the hippie method, if you will, is taking whole wheat flour and washing it until all of the starch is removed. I think that when you're starting out making it, that's a good way of doing it, but I think that you're better off just getting a good quality gluten flour. And you can even mix it with other flours if you want to, but I don't recommend that. And then you just kind of just experiment and make things that way. And
well, what we do is mix it with soy flour.
Yeah, we mix it with soy flour. That helps take away a little bit of the, I guess, the toughness, because protein is protein, right?
And that's that way, it's not rubbery.
Yeah, because protein, you think it's just bread protein, but I'm telling you, protein is protein. And when you make seitan, it can get really tough. It's like bad cooked meat. You really have to know what you're doing. And we find that slow cooking is the best. So for people who are making seitan and it's coming out too bread-like, you want to cook it for as long as you possibly can. So a slow cooker is ideal.
Yeah. I know that we had talked about before we went on air about food share, because you're not cooking out of your homes. You're cooking out of food share. So maybe you could tell us about food share and why you decided to do your cooking there.
Well, food share is a great program which is called the Toronto Kitchen Incubator, and it's specifically for startup food companies that are doing healthy, affordable food. And it's a great program. We rent by the hour there at their kitchen. And it's just nice to be tied in with an organization that's all about food security. And
yeah, and it's just for a commercial, there's a dearth of commercial kitchens available. You might think that you look in the yellow pages under commercial kitchen rental, and there's nothing there. It's difficult to find places. So we cook on the weekends, that's our schedule. So things like churches and banquet halls are out, because that's when they have all their weddings and whatnot. Like during the week, they're empty. But during the weekend, it's impossible. And a lot of them are expensive as well. So it's really the fact that it's a fully equipped commercial kitchen and it's available at a relatively low hourly rate, it's actually quite good. So it really is an amazing thing that they've added. It really is something else. And you can check it out. I think I'm not sure the website, but I think it's foodshare.net. And there's a link for the TKI. And we're on there as well, so you can read more about that and find out about that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm imagining too that some people are probably pretty sold at this point, and so maybe you can give us some of the logistics of like how it actually works with if you wanted to sign up for this, or you deliver once a week, and how does that work?
Well, people can they can sign up online. We have an online form, or they can just call us or email us. Either way, and then we get their address and. We deliver between 12 and 6 on Tuesdays, and it comes in the reusable containers so that they just wash them out, and then we're going to sterilize them to be reused again, and we pick it up the following week. We just do an exchange of the cooler bag. Which has got an ice pack in there to keep it insulated.
Mm-hmm. It's hearthtohome.ca, and you can go and check it out now on the menu page. You can, the best thing to do is sign up for our newsletter, and you'll get our menus each week. You don't, you know, even if you're not going to order for a while, or if you do, at least you'll keep getting the menus. So you'll see them, you'll be up to date, and we're going to expand the newsletter as well eventually, so there'll be other information in there. So that's the best thing, is to go to the website and sign up.
And there's example meals that are listed on the website too, right? You have July broken down into, I think, 3 different weeks of what people would be getting.
It's actually 5 weeks because we're 5 weeks in July. So our whole July menu's up there.
Yeah.
And then we'll be putting up the August menu soon.
So you'll be able to see all the menus weeks in advance when you check it out. So you'll know what you're getting.
So what if you, is there any room for flexibility? Like, I know that you have some soups that people can buy maybe additionally. Is that how it works?
Yeah,
like,
that's optional.
What kind of flexibility is there in the choices then?
Right now, it's basically a set menu, so you do get the it's what we call entree packages, and that's each entree comprising the protein dish, the vegetable dish, and the whole grain dish. So that's set so that we can combine everybody's buying power, basically, and keep our prices lower for having organic produce and just the labor involved in coming up with all these dishes.
Mm-hmm. But the soups are sort of an additional thing that you can buy.
Yeah, if it's optional, if people want a soup, then they can add that to their meal as well. As time goes on, we'll see how things work. We'll probably have a regular rotation of our menu. We might add things like vegetarian cheeses, because I know that's something
that's definitely
going to
be coming up as we expand.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I'm always craving to have. So we're going to have like nut and seed kind of cheeses and spreads, things that you can have for lunches and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's pretty much where we're going now. Yeah, I mean, that's it.
How many people are actually using the service at this point?
We have about 36 right now because it's the summertime, and then we expect that things are going to build up again in the fall.
Yeah, we're looking at doing some more advertising, some mail outs. We're looking at a radio ad as well.
Okay.
So we're hoping that's going to drum up a lot of business for us. I'll just jump ahead. We're looking soon at doing catering. Smaller events. We're not looking at, let's say, doing a wedding or anything right off the bat, but if people have dinner parties or they have events where there's 12 to 20 people or something like that, we're going to start looking at doing those sorts of things and making them a little more interesting than kind of what you typically get. But it depends on the event as well and what's going on.
Is there anything like this in Toronto besides what you guys are doing? I mean, is there another caterer that does vegan organic stuff?
There's one other place in Her Hands.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's organic, but it is vegan. And she's really good with like food intolerances and allergies and that sort of thing, which isn't really our specialty. Other than that, there are just the traditional ones. Some of them have maybe vegetarian options. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems that people more and more are moving towards at least being open to veganism just because the health benefits. I mean, there was a big study that came out about diabetes and the vegan diet as being an ideal diet for somebody who does have diabetes.
Yes, yes.
So people, I'm assuming that you're not just getting ethical vegans then. You had mentioned that there are people who are not vegetarian that also use the service.
No, yeah. It's exactly that. A big challenge of ours is trying to convince people that you don't have to be vegan to eat vegan food, no more than you have to be Chinese to eat Chinese food. It's for people who want to start cutting down on the amount of animal products that they're eating. And this is a really, really good way of doing it. And ideally, that's what you want to do. I think sometimes it can be difficult to tell people to stop eating meat and dairy immediately. And some people get into a panic. But if you want to convince someone to become a vegan, you can show them pictures of a slaughterhouse, or you can make them a really good vegan meal. And they'll be like, well, I could do this.
Do you have people then that have been surprised by the taste and that
absolutely
can be satisfying?
Yeah, mm-hmm. People that have not eaten vegan before and they're like, wow.
Yeah.
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 Oh, really. That's great news.
Yeah, it is. It's encouraging that way. And again, that's why we say, you know, we're doing things a little differently than what, you know, you can expect. And we're not a vegetarian restaurant, but again, you're not going to find a lot of what we produce on plates of vegetarian restaurants in Toronto, even. I mean, it's a different kind of approach.
Mm-hmm. But it's inspiring for us, for sure.
Absolutely.
Like at the feedback that we have.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, Hearth to Home really seems to, it's just such a beautiful example of two people kind of taking a leap in life and doing what they love. This really does sound like a labor of love. You were both doing other things before 2005 besides concentrating on food and delivering it to people.
Definitely.
So, I mean, that's amazing that you decided to pursue the dream.
Yeah, it's just we're really happy about it. We're really enjoying it.
We do. We think it's a good time, and we think this is the right time to do this as well. I think that the world is moving towards this slowly. People are moving towards it. I think this area of the world is going to see a real influx of people. I think more and more people are going to be starting migrating to the Great Lakes area, in Toronto especially.
With the climate change. And water shortages.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's going to also just affect how people are eating, so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, we are pretty much out of time. We've kept you over your delivery schedule, but I wanted to turn it back over to you and ask if you had any final words or a favorite dish that you have or a favorite cookbook author or anything that you wanted to share with our listeners as we complete the interview.
Oh, I don't know.
Plug the website again at the very least.
It's hearthtohome.ca. Hearth to Home.
H-E-A-R-T-H.
T-H, yeah.
Okay.
Heart to Home. It's Hearth to Home.
Okay.
That's really about it, I think, for me.
Okay. Raisa, what about you? Did you have anything you wanted to say?
No, not really.
I want to hear about your favorite dish that's on the menu right now that you offer.
Well, I'm not sure about on the menu right now. Let's see. My favorites are basically some of the stuffed shells, the cannellini that I've done with the dandelion.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And the cheese. That's
the jumbo with pesto shells, the stuffed shells. Those are really good. That's a creamy sauce with dandelion inside a shell, and that's a big favorite of people's as well.
You like the creamy ones?
I'm kind of like the creamy cheese person.
Yeah.
And I'm the meat guy. Actually.
This is how it breaks down with Carl and I as well. Carl is... was much more into meat than I was, and for me it was a bit tougher to give up cheese, so we identify.
Sure. Well, it's addictive, you know, you gotta break the addiction.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had people on that have talked about the addictive qualities of meat and cheese and the opiates and all that kind of stuff, so yeah, if you can find creamy alternatives, that's great. So what about you, Mitch? Did you have favorites?
I like anything. I like a tofu steak. I'm a very simple kind of guy. Like, if I tell people my favorite meal is really a hamburger, people probably be, oh my God. But I like things that can be grilled. For me, I like anything that can be thrown on the barbecue. So, I mean, I have made sausages before, like we've done vegan sausages, and we can go on and on, but that's what I really like. I like the stuff that's meaty that I can throw in a grill and get the grill lines and smoky flavor, and so, you know,
I guess I'll tell you, my real favorite dish is not on the menu, it's my breakfast.
Okay.
Which is soft-boiled tofu. So I also like eggs, so I like soft-boiled eggs that are, like, you know, really yolky. So Mitch actually came up with the basic recipe for me because I was just missing it all the time. I have this every morning. I have fresh squeezed orange juice, and I have my soft-boiled tofu, which is silken tofu that's with a broth and some turmeric and... it's tarragon.
It's like if you had a soft boiled egg and you mushed it with a fork and put it on a piece of toast. I mean,
the description doesn't do it justice.
It's actually very convincing. If you have that craving for a soft boiled egg, that actually does it. And I'm actually working. I should maybe say this is one of my projects. Is I'm actually working on creating a vegan egg. That can be commercially bought in the store. That's all I'll say right now. But it will be a whole. Egg, it'll be the real deal. And you, anyway, I won't say any more, but it's going to be quite something if I can get it.
We'll have you back on.
I'll advertise it when that
comes out. So this is amazing. Started in 2005. Hearth to Home. Thanks, Mitch and Raisa, for being in the studio today. It was a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great snacking. I would have eaten more, but I felt a bit self-conscious eating into my mic.
No problem.
So yeah, thanks again for coming in, and we'll keep an eye out for you guys and. Love to have you back in the studio and hear how the business grows. And yeah, and congratulations. It sounds like it's been a real success. So
thanks so much.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to take a short little break. We'll come back with Carl. He's going to bring us some news. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Again, we were just speaking with Mitch and Reysa, and we were talking about Hearth to Home, a great vegan organic food delivery service. Maybe you didn't think it was possible. Check it out. Their website, again?
It's hearthtohome.ca.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot. I'm going to totally eat the rest of this meal now.
You have to save me some.
It's really good.
I had very small bites because I knew you were gonna be trying it. So
I think it's a whole new skill set for me to try to figure out how to be able to eat live on air and not really be obscene crunching into the mic. It's amazing food though.
It's really fantastic. And to add a point to what Mitch was saying about the sort of benefits of this service, it really would save you a lot of time in cooking. What I find one of the hardest parts about cooking your own food is the time involved in going to the grocery store, coming home from the grocery store, preparing things. And there's so much effort and work that goes into making a meal, that should be counted into the price of things too. And for what it's worth, the prices are very reasonable.
Yeah,
as well.
I think too that it's, I mean, so often it's like one pot wonders, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is really amazing that you can have, you know, I'm looking at four different things here that they offer, right? So there's that real diversity too, which is nice.
Yeah. So now some horrifying news from the AR world. This first article is coming to us from the Vancouver Sun, and it's about BC bears being killed to fuel an illegal international trade. This is from Victoria, BC. Bears are being killed to fuel the illegal international trade in bear bile and gallbladders, and some local bear populations are in trouble because of greedy poachers. Quote, overall, the bear population in BC is strong, but from what we know of trafficking and poaching, certain areas are targeted and it can have a direct negative impact in those areas, said Lance Sundquist, Conservation Officer's Service Manager for the South Coast. Recently, three bear carcasses were found near Nanaimo on Vancouver Island, with their gallbladders and paws removed, and conservation officers fear the mutilated bodies are the tip of the iceberg. Quote, we know it continues to be a problem in BC, but the challenge for us is trying to assess how large the problem is, Sundquist said. Do we know about 10% of what is going on, or is it 50%? The frontline poacher is not likely to get more than $50 or $100 for a bear gallbladder, but the price increases as it is processed into ointments, powders, and liquids. Federal wildlife officers find bear bile and gallbladders being illegally imported, illegally exported, and illegally sold in Asian medicine stores. Quote, we have come across bear medicines in Victoria in recent years. It's not specific to one municipality. We have seen these types of products across the country, said Marco Galuzza, federal wildlife officer with Environment Canada in Vancouver. The average price of a bear gallbladder is estimated to be, by the World Society for the Protection of Animals at $235 in Canada and $631 in the U.S. However, when processed and smuggled out of Canada to Asia, where it is prized for curing everything from cancer to erectile dysfunction, the products from one gallbladder can sell for up to $45,000. Ironically, the emergence of bear farms in countries such as China, Korea, and Vietnam, where bears are kept in tiny cages with tubes stuck into their gallbladders to drain the bile, are fueling demand for wild bear bile, even though synthetic and herbal substitutes work better, says Michelle Cliff of the World Society for the Protection of Animals. People using the product believe bile from wild bears is more potent than bile from farmed bears, said Cliff, who said the incident near Nanaimo draws attention to the threat Canadian bears are under. She said aggressive production and marketing of bear bile products in Asia has increased demand, which is having a negative effect on bear populations in Canada and across the globe. The World Society for the Protection of Animals has developed a test kit which is being field tested for the next 6 months by federal wildlife officers, which will show when bear protein is present in a product. Galuzza is hoping it will help officers identify illegal bear-derived products, which can be in liquid, powder, granule, or pill form. Quote, I have seen a mixture where it was combined with alcohol so it could be injected, he said. Education of users is seen as key to stopping the trade. Dr. Xiaochuan Pan, principal of the Canadian College of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine in Victoria, said all his students are taught to use synthetic bile. Quote, we seldom use animal parts. People here don't like animal products, and it is not good for the environment, he said. Also, synthetic bile is more consistent and better tolerated, Pan said. Now, for people who do follow AR News, I'm sure you've heard of this story, but for those that don't, this could come as quite a shock. This is in response to the indictment of Michael Vick, the quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, excuse me. And this is a article from the Asbury Park Press, which says, "Dogfighting is common in New Jersey, officials say. An indictment puts light on blood sport. Dogfighting could be happening closer to your home than you realize, occurring in urban areas to central New Jersey farms, according to local animal rescue agencies. Quote, it's about money, said Matt Stanton, spokesman for the New Jersey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. It's about being macho, having the biggest dog on the block. There is no one profile, because money talks to all races in all places. A good fighting dog can earn at least tens of thousands of dollars for its owner, Stanton said. Dogfighting, what Stanton said the SPCA labels as a blood sport, gained national attention this past week with a federal indictment against Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick, who is accused of running a dogfighting operation in Virginia. The Humane Society of the United States estimates that there are some 40,000 professional dogfighters in the United States involved in putting on fights and buying and selling fighting dogs for exhibitions that can have purses as high as $100,000. Dogfighting is, of course, illegal in all 50 states. In New Jersey, Assemblyman Jeff Van Drew, a Democrat from Cape May, wants charges to update and expand the law against the abuse of animals and to stiffen penalties. Van Drew said offenders of animal cruelty are sent to municipal court and judges rarely know what to do because of a quote-unquote hodgepodge of laws, many of which were established in 1880. Van Drew's proposal has been cleared by an assembly committee, but hasn't been considered by the full assembly or the state senate. However, fighting rings are notoriously hard to find, Stanton said. It's a transient society that exists on websites and through word of mouth. Quote, you almost have to catch them in the act of fighting the dogs, and that's tough, Stanton said. Even then, you have to stretch to make a case. It's very difficult to prosecute. As rescue organizations fight the practice, they also see the real damage it does to the animals involved. Shelters often received or find left on their doorsteps dogs who are so aggressive, shelter workers can barely give medical care to the animals' wounds. Kristen Chiaffi, animal control officer at the Plainfield Area Humane Society, said the shelter must often euthanize such dogs as they represent liabilities in shelters. Sadly, they are too aggressive to put up for adoption, said Chiaffi, who owns three pit bulls. In fact, Chiaffi said, each employee at a shelter owns at least one pit bull. We've seen a lot of abuse, and it hurts because we know how sweet they can be. Chiaffi said, once in a while, she'll come to work, and a pit bull will be tied to the front porch of the shelter. Anonymous drop-offs of pit bulls are preferred by Chiaffi when the alternative is to shoot, electrocute, or hang an unsuccessful or injured dog. All allegations within the Vick indictment and common ways of killing dogs who aren't making it, their owners money, said Stanton. An interesting, actually, letter to the editor that was published in the Los Angeles Times, which is not the same paper, but in relation to the same case, which I thought I would read as well, just because of the comparison it makes. This was a letter in the Los Angeles Times on July 20th, 2007. The alleged grotesque and cruel treatment of dogs by Vick is shocking and disgusting. It is hard to imagine that the same horrific treatment is inflicted on chickens, pigs, and cows every day on factory farms. The animal that ends up as a chicken nugget, a hamburger, a steak, or bacon was beaten, shocked, de-beaked, imprisoned in a cage or pen, artificially impregnated, milked dry, forced to lay eggs to exhaustion, deprived of any natural activity, including bonding with offspring, and then executed. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, you have just dined, and however scrupulously the slaughterhouse is concealed, in the graceful distance of miles, there is complicity. And that was a letter from Sharon Hall in Torrance to the Los Angeles Times in response to the Vick case. And finally, from the India Telegraph, this is an article with a rather doomy title called Little Hope for Rhinos. Officials of the Kasaranga National Park today admitted that they were helpless in containing the recent spurt in poaching, even as another rhino was killed inside the game reserve. Forest guards today recovered the carcass from inside a pit near Natanbeel under the Agaratoli range of the park. The horn was missing. The rhino is suspected to have been killed a few days ago. This was the 10th rhino to fall prey to poachers in the national park this year. The park has a rhino population of around 2,000, nearly 60% of the total population of rhinoceroses in the world. Another rhino was killed at, I'm going to totally get this wrong, Gorai Mauri in the Bagori Range on Tuesday. The range has the highest concentration of rhinos in the national park and is heavily guarded. Kasiranga Director S. Buragohain said the park administration was taking all steps to check the recent spurt in rhino poaching, but pleaded helplessness since resources were limited. Quote, a gang of poachers with international links is behind the recent rhino killings at the national park. The gang is equipped with the latest weapons, he said. The park director added that many of the rifles being used by the forest guards were not working properly as they were quite ancient. There is also a shortage of manpower for patrolling the 340 square kilometer park, considered the home of the one-horned rhinoceros. The Assam Forest Department has decided to open an intelligence wing since rhino poaching has risen sharply. The decision to open the intelligence wing was taken after reports came in that members of a gang of international buyers of rhino horns were regularly visiting Assam. Assam Forest Minister Raqibul Hussain had earlier announced a special action plan to check rhino poaching at Kasiranga. As part of the action plan, more forest guards are scheduled to be deployed in the national park. On Wednesday, the park received a new consignment of arms and ammunition to aid officers in their battle against poachers. The consignment includes 50 315 caliber rifles and 8,000 bullets.
Thanks for the news, Carl.
No problem.
That's Carl Orzechowski, who's our tech and news person and sometimes co-host. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear your feedback about this program or any of our other programs. You can write us at animalvoices@gmail.com. And you can go to our website, animalvoices.ca, if you're interested in checking out this program again or any of our 200-plus archive shows. They're available for free download, again, off the website.
And I would also actually love to plug our Facebook group, which is lots of fun and good times. And you can see who's friends with us and become friends with them, and we'll have a big friend party.
That sounds great. I should let people know too that some of our recently archived programs are online from the past 2 or 3 weeks. So we had the interview with Ray Sikora and Gary Francione, which was a very popular show. Got a lot of good feedback about it, and we had both of those authors and educators on the program to talk about commonly asked questions to vegans and animal rights activists. We had them field these questions, each from their own perspective. So that's online at animalvoices.ca. We also have the interview that Rob did about meat eating and the consequences to the environment. We had the interview with Keith Mann, too, which was, I know, a favorite of Carl's. We spoke with Keith about his activities, the Animal Liberation Front, and about his new book, From Dusk Till Dawn. So, again, you can check out all of those shows, animalvoices.ca. We've been on the air for a really long time, and so we have a pretty big archive of programs to offer to people. And I'll say goodbye for now, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.